Target.
Okay, we do have a quorum now, so we'll officially call the meeting to order. I will move that House file, or Senate file number 4, be recommended to pass and referred to the General Registry. I'm going to have Mr. Phil Marks explain the fiscal note for anybody. Bill?
Mr. Chair, members, on the fiscal note, it's the relevant information on page 3.
And you should have the fiscal note in your packet. Is that correct? Very good. Bill?
The discussion in the first two parts, bill description and assumptions, deals with what the PUC is the Public Utilities Commission is assuming regarding additional staffing needs for this energy credits trading issue. And as Representative Peterson talked about, this issue has just shown up, but this is something that Representative Hilty's bill will have to address later, the bill that funds the PUC. And as pointed out in here, there is the way the Public Utilities Commission works is that they levy an assessment essentially equal to the amount of their appropriation. So it becomes, that's why the fiscal note, the net number on the front page is zero. As they estimate their costs, as they have an appropriation to cover their costs, they would also have an assessment against those entities they regulate to recover that cost. As I said, that's an issue that's going to, since there's no appropriation in the bill, that's an issue that would have to be resolved when Representative Hilty's bill or the Energy Finance Division bill deals with funding for the Public Utilities Commission. The second issue regarding a fiscal impact that Representative Peterson mentioned is the long-term fiscal considerations about two-thirds of the way down that page 3 of the fiscal note. And this is that item that's Representative Peterson pointed out on the top of page 7 of the bill, the possible penalty if utilities don't follow or don't meet these standards. And the fiscal note just says utility noncompliance could generate penalty revenue in future years. It is impossible at this time to know what those revenues might be. So there is no estimated revenue related to that. It's a pointing out there could be revenue.
Questions? Any questions for members? Representative Clark.
Mr. Chairman, unfortunately, I don't sit on any of the committees that have looked at this so far, so this may be kind of a basic question. But on the credit trading system, is that...
Can you point out the page?
Well, I'm actually looking at the summary, so I'm not sure what page it's on. Renewable Energy Credit Trading System. Okay. Maybe you can help somebody. Maybe the author can help me find it.
Mine's on page 5, which...
Subdivision
4.
Representative Park.
Mr. Chair, sorry.
Chairman, I'm just trying to understand that a little bit more clearly, what that actually does do. Can I just have a brief explanation maybe from the
well,
other?
Representative Peter.
Mr. Chair and Representative Clark, it's setting up a trading of credits that there's been a desire to have at the PUC for a number of years, but it actually has not ever been established. So this will establish that program. And it gives you some examples. I mean, you can trade a credit between to meet the standard, but you can only trade a credit once, and you can only trade a credit to meet the standard. And each credit weighs the same based on where it comes from. That's a sense, you know, a credit of wind or a credit of solar is a credit. So what we're saying is that we're starting a credit system, which has been a desire of many involved with this bill for years, but it hasn't actually happened at the Public Utility Commission.
Representative Clark?
One question I have is, are people able to trade off pollution credits?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Clark, this is just for satisfying the standard. It's not related to pollution or carbon cap and trade, none of that. It's just for megawatts of this or kilowatts of that to meet the standard.
So, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, that's not anywhere in this bill, then.
Representative Clark, no.
Thank you.
Okay. Other discussion? Any other discussion? Questions? If not, then I would renew my motion that Senate File 4 be recommended to pass and refer to the General Registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And carried. Representative Peterson, it wasn't so bad.
No, thank you, Chairman Silver. Hope I don't see you again.
Well, it isn't that bad.
Oh, I know. Thank you very much.
While we take a break and have Representative Tingle sit down, we have the minutes of the meeting of February 8th. Representative Gunther, would you be so kind? I'm sure you studied them.
I've studied them completely and I thoroughly approve them.
Okay, Representative Gunther moves the minutes of February 8th. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And carried. Representative Tingle said, welcome to the committee. Representative Osmond, would you be so kind as to move House File 293 to and recommend to pass and refer to the General Register?
It would be my privilege, Chair.
Representative Tingleson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I appreciate the opportunity to come before you today with the $23 million package from the Legislative Citizen Commission on Minnesota Resources. I have these visuals in front here to show the 5 months of work, hundreds of hours by a group of dedicated citizens and legislators, 17 under the new configuration with the new legislative citizen group, 10 legislators, 7 citizens. And Representative Chair Solberg chaired the task force that helped to put together this new commission over the last year, so I'd like to thank him, as well as Representative Lynn Carlson, who serves on the LCCMR, and Representative Osment has served on the LCCMR, and I'm trying to see if there's anybody else here. So appreciate all that help. I know we've had some of the citizens visit as legislation has moved from committee to committee here with their interest in the process. You have several things in your packet, some colored sheets that give the overview of the process and the projects that were submitted. There were over 80 projects submitted. We dealt with a lot of water and land issues this year, and with the new LCCMR, it will be an annual process instead of every other year. And so of those 80 or so proposals that were submitted this fall, there's 32 that are funded in this $23 million package. And I just want to make real clear that there's no general fund dollars with this. It is funding from the Environmental Trust Fund, the lottery proceeds. There are some smaller funding mechanisms in here, including the LawCon, and I think is there one other smaller one. I have with me today Mr. John Boleyn, the executive director of the LCCMR, so we'll cover that if you have questions on that. But I know oftentimes people ask about the lottery proceeds, and many of you serve on either environment or finance committee, so some of that was covered in there. And then the details about how the process went this fall with the proposals. So, you know, the bill itself is 19 pages, and as far as putting together the package, that was, you know, fairly typical to what we've done in past years. And so these were the projects that went through a lot of scrutiny, and the result is here in front of you with House File 293. So I don't know if you want me to go through the bill specifically, Mr. Chair.
Well,
or
members, maybe what we can do is in your packet that's stapled together, there's a kind of a spreadsheet that looks like this, two-sided. It's subdivision 3, 4, and 5. Those, I think, are that is the list, I believe, of funding and where they go to. So if you want to take a look at that, as we went through finance, there was an amendment offered to clarify some language that's been incorporated into the bill in the section that deals with the forest legacy conservation easements. I know there's been some additional conversations going on that particular section of the bill. and how it relates, but I don't have any, proposals before us today on that. So members, if you have any questions on those particular proposals, Representative Paulson, did you have?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Not necessarily on those specific proposals,
okay,
but I'm...
Anything else?
I'm curious, Representative Tingelstad, I know there's been some discussion since the legislative auditor came out with the report on nonprofit grants and contracts and some of the oversight that occurs in those. I mean, are there any safeguards that are in place now with the LCMR with these similar types of grants that are awarded to organizations in terms of management and process and making sure that... I noticed there's some carryover funds that are in the bill, and I'm not sure why that's the case. I'm just curious what sort of processes are in place, you know, for these projects.
Representative Tingelstad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Paulson, yes, and actually a related question came up about that in the Finance Committee. And with the Legislative Auditor's Report, one thing that they noted is that the LCMR has a good process, one that they really noted has good oversight. So kind of as an example, but I think perhaps Mr. Boleyn can answer that more thoroughly as far as some of the oversight, because it is pretty intense.
Mr. Boleyn, if you'd like to identify your name for the case, please.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is John Boleyn. I'm the director for the Legislative Citizen Commission on Minnesota Resources. First time through is always a little tougher. Representative Paulson, we pride ourselves on a high degree of accountability. First of all, the process that we go through is very, very competitive. In fact, many people have complained that it's too competitive. They can't ever get anything out of the trust fund because it's such a competitive process. Secondly, once the appropriations are made, there is then a work program put in place, which actually goes way beyond the proposal in scaling out exactly what's going to be done, at what period of time, what the deliverables are. We're going to measure projects on their deliverables. We are also going to check periodically on a desk audit or field audit basis, check reimbursement so that we can be assured that everything is in place that needs to be in place. It's receipts or documented expenditures and that kind of thing. In addition, we have a list of eligible and ineligible project costs that cannot be charged to the trust fund. It includes such things as an indirect cost rate, payment for rent for an organization where they already exist, of course, and another page and a half, I should say, not just a few items. And my staff and I do check on that regularly. So, and in addition, for any non-state entity, such as an NGO, a nonprofit, there is a contract with the state. We call that a pass-through contract, where a state agency actually has the contract. The work program that I described is the heart. The deliverables are entailed in that work program. But the contract then creates that arm's-length relationship and the ability to go in and audit as needed. Beyond that, I'd be open to further question.
Okay. Representative Paulson, follow-up?
And Mr. Chairman, that sounds like you have some strenuous processes put in place to make sure those deliverables take place. I'm just curious, then, on page 2 of the bill, I notice there's a carryover of $50,000. Is that normal that there's carryovers on projects like this? And I'm not sure what that is. I'm just curious if one of you could address that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Paulson, no, it's not usual, but the LCMR has gone through a rather remarkable transition in the last 18 to 24 months. And as a result, well, first of all, our administrative budget was canceled for the last fiscal year, beginning July 1st of 2006. And with all the tumult with the task force going on and so forth, there were a number of things that we did not get to do that we intended to do. One of which is to take up the advice of the task force that Representative Tingelstad mentioned earlier, which would be to increase our efforts in outreach and communications. We need someone who is both an analyst and a communicator to make sure that the trust fund gets its proper due. As you may know, the lottery has a multi-million-dollar budget for advertising. We don't. I operate this commission on a 4% overhead. 4%. When the task force looked at other states' organizations, Missouri, Nebraska, Colorado, I think we also looked at North Carolina, actually had some of them in and reviewed some of them on desk basis. Most of them are running on a double-digit overhead figure, anywhere from, well, one was at 9, but most of them are in the 10, 11, 12, 13% range. But so this carry forward is going to provide us with the money to do this coming biennium what we simply didn't get to in the last fiscal year because of all the tumult. And I don't want to sound complaining, Mr. Chair, about the tumult. Well, maybe I should. It really was tumultuous. But I think we have a pretty good process in place now, and many, many thanks to especially Co-Chair Tinglestead, who has helped get this thing off to a pretty good start.
Other questions? Representative Schumper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Looks like you had 85 proposals and you funded 28, and only about 4 or 5 included non-government partners, the way it looks, or those not connected to the state. Doesn't that seem a little low, like maybe more non-government related entities should have been involved?
Representative Tinglestead, want to try to answer that?
Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you. Well, a lot of it is dependent upon who actually submits the proposals. So some of that is reflected in the results, but I think Mr. Boleyn can put some more insight on this.
Mr. Boleyn?
Mr. Chair and members, going on from the tumultuousness that I described a moment ago, the members of the LCCMR were not appointed until the last members were appointed August 28th last summer. When the group of 17 finally got together, we actually had announced the first meeting to be August 30th on a hopeful note. Everybody showed up. We started taking a look at the nature of the task in front of the commission, and they all realized that we simply did not have the kind of time necessary to go through a full-scale strategic plan and a full-scale, wide-open competitive process. So they decided to narrow the focus of the commission for this year. We're set up on an annual basis now, so we'll be coming in again in 2008. Again, in order to meet the January confines of a biennial report with our recommendations, all of a sudden, I call it like an accordion. Once the middle of August came around, I started saying, oh my goodness, I don't know if we're going to be able to finish this at all. So the request for proposals that went out, it was only on the street for 30 days. That's abnormal. Normally it's 60 days. The request for proposals was written much more narrowly. And in fact, the commission members had a strategy ahead of time that what they would do is invite in for serious further consideration certain past projects that they knew to be very good performers. Things like state park and trail acquisition. The intention in the future, I can't guarantee this, I'm the director, not the member, I can't guarantee this, but the intention in the future would be to have a much more robust strategic plan. In fact, we have one project going on now for a statewide conservation and preservation plan. And the initial results of that this coming June will actually feed into a development of a more robust strategic plan. So we will also then have, assuming that, and I'm sure that all of you will be gone certainly by the constitutional deadline, if not before. A positive nodding. We will then have a full summer to do what we need to do instead of basically September through December. So that's a very long-winded, I realize, answer, but I want you to have the background that we did this consciously, not to exclude NGOs consciously, but we had a much accelerated and compacted process. Many people I have heard from simply said, oh, 30 days, I didn't have time to write the proposal. I simply didn't have the time.
Thank you.
Representative Swigum?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Representative Swigum, the state government asked you a question about the pilot project on page 15. The university is Minnesota in cooperation with the world on that pilot project.
Representative Swigum, can you just direct you to the microphone a little bit? Can you pull it down? Well, I probably don't, but the tape does. Somebody 40 years from now will want to hear you.
Okay. I'm sure it'll make somebody's day. Yeah.
But the question I had is I just did some minimal, very, very minimal research on the Rural Advantage group, whoever that is. I had my legislative assistants say, Google it, find out what Rural Advantage is. Couldn't find a thing. We found out a person who might be a director, and we found out a number, and that was absolutely it. Before the House floor, can you get me some information as to Rural Advantage, who it is, what the group is, the mission, the advocacy? Thank you. That's all I need.
We'll do a full count.
Sure. And Mr. Chair, Representative Bigham, we do have a full work program on each of these projects, so that would probably be helpful, too, to see a little more detail.
I would like to see that, but I would also like to see who the group, who is it?
A very long story, actually.
So. Any other questions? I have one on the spreadsheet. Just for a point of clarification, Representative Tingleton, at the top of your spreadsheet, you have the total from the trust fund of $22,866,000. And then the lock-on one, the $500,000. Is the $500,000 a federal fund, Mr. Green?
Mr. Chair and members, yes and no. We consider it to be state money because there's a federal program called Land and Water Conservation, LOCON, that will reimburse the state of Minnesota 50% of the cost of eligible projects. Those include things like acquisition for the outdoor recreation system, both the state and the local. That $500,000 represents the reimbursements collected so far or expected to be collected during this fiscal year. And it is available only to be spent our statute says it's only available to be spent on LOCON eligible activities in the future, thus perpetuating this reimbursement cycle over time, so that $500,000 will literally generate in another year or so, if Congress doesn't muck it up, another $250,000 and so on down the road. And then, in addition, many of the expenditures in here that are trust fund dollars will also be available to earn additional lock-on reimbursements if but only if Congress accelerates the amount available. This is actually a function of a national apportionment that comes into play. So each state gets a certain delegated amount. Half of it goes to the National Park Service and federal agencies. The other half goes to the states. So this is an apportionment amount. If Congress severely restricts the lock-on appropriations, then this number next time will dwindle down to much, much smaller. Okay. And that's a distinct possibility, I understand.
Okay. Other questions at all? Any other questions? Representative Murphy, are you giving those out to all of us?
Scripts and McNamara, right? Valentine.
Just for you. I noticed.
But I share.
Representative Osmond then renews his motion that House File 293 be recommended to pass and placed in the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Okay. Members, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members,
yes.
Appreciate it.
Meeting is adjourned.